Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Measuring Post. Again, my name is Joe Massa, and today I've got a very special guest, somebody I'm really excited to bring on here. She is a Gen Z speaker, a content creator, an advocate. She's also founder of Hosts of Influence, which we'll get into in just a little bit. She's already reached over 200 million impressions this year alone. She's an author, a public speaker, a real creator with purpose. I would love to welcome Gigi Robinson to The Measuring Post. How are you today?
I'm doing so good. Thank you for having me. This is so fun and exciting. And I'm just excited to be connected through the internet, which I think, you know, is one of the greatest ways to communicate with people these days. And I'm sure people listening will find this episode through the internet. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And definitely as a Gen Zer, not myself, as you can clearly tell, that's sort of the area that you grew up in. So it's great to see that you embraced it, but you've also used that tool to do so much good in the world, not only for just making amazing content and being such a great storyteller, but you've created some great programs. You've also written an amazing book, which I'll let you get into, but sort of where did your passion for just storytelling begin? And were you always just this outgoing person, or did things kind of lead you to this path where you're this big voice in the internet space?
I definitely was not always this outgoing, but I actually went to Tony Robbins UPW in the summer of 2017. And if those of you that don't know, that's like his basic entry level program you can go to. And it was right before I was transferring from FIT to USC. And I was going out there with no family out there, no connections in Los Angeles. I just knew that I was going somewhere by myself. And normally I'm like shy and, you know, I wouldn't speak up for myself. I would just kind of like not be a follower, but I would just kind of beat to my own drum, do my own thing, mind my own business. But I realized that going somewhere new is going to push you in ways that you really need to be outgoing. You need to find that community in one way or another. And that may just look like walking through the club fair alone. That may look like going out to parties with people that you're not really sure of and just seeing what comes of it. And I made a commitment to myself that summer that when I got to LA, that I would kind of have this rebrand, this new alter ego where I wasn't scared to put myself in rooms that maybe were slightly uncomfortable, because I knew that on the other side of it is that beautiful threshold of possibility, right? Of who can I meet? What friends can I have? What jobs will this lead me to? What career can I build from this? What experience will I have? And so that was what pushed me, I think, to, again, consciously make a decision to change the way my behavior was so that I could navigate the world in a way that would elevate me and that would showcase my talent and allow me to become the best version of myself. And then I guess with the storytelling thing, I got a bachelor's of fine arts, which people always joke that that's the worst degree to get, but I'm using that degree every single day, especially as a content creator, which we can get into later. Where I genuinely am making graphics, editing thumbnails, changing typography, choosing things based on color theory and design thinking through ideas. So I actually think that degree was very helpful, especially also with storytelling and critiques and being okay with feedback when a brand comes back to me and says, oh, we need these adjustments. It's not personal. It's just what they need for their commercial ad, which is all social media marketing is. And I think that over time, the storytelling has just gotten stronger and stronger as I've gotten more comfortable being outspoken about different topics.
Yeah, you hit a couple things there I think are really great. The first thing you said that really stuck in my mind is this going into places where you might not be so comfortable. And I think that's the best place to be, especially if you're trying to grow or take yourself to the next level. You have to put yourselves in those uncomfortable situations because you're pushing yourselves out of your comfort zone. You're sort of going, pushing the envelope further than you've gone before, which is a very uncomfortable feeling. But typically that's when you make those big breakthroughs or you really find something true about yourself, or maybe even just, you know, completely fail and realize that that's not what you want to do, or you fail and you realize, hey, I can do this. This wasn't as bad as I thought. So pick yourself up and go back to it. And Tony Robbins, obviously great for finding that inner motivation. But, you know, another thing you talk about getting that degree, the fine arts degree, that those type of degrees are really making a resurgence in their necessity right now with this demographic of living on the internet. And you're right, making thumbnails and graphics, and we're all digitally focused businesses nowadays. Even if you're a roofer or an electrician, you still have an online presence. You still have a logo. You still have to invoice online. There's certain things that you can still do the old school way. And again, I kind of grew up, I'm that generation that had both sides of the fence. I grew up with the old school way, but I was there for the birth of the internet. It makes me sound so old when I say that. I'm older than Google. But then now, I've fully adopted it. But so I understand a lot of those older generations go, you don't want that degree. You'll never do anything with it. It's like, no, actually, you're wrong. Nowadays, I absolutely will do something with it. So I love that. And then the third thing you said that really I want to push out there to the audience, it's okay to get feedback. A lot of people take it as negative. And it's like this, constructive criticism is one thing that you should really embrace. Now, obviously, if somebody's just being a jerk and bashing you, I understand the defensive is, feeling defensive. But for the most part, if you can't take feedback, you're going to have a rough go at things. So I love all of that. And really, it just kind of reflects on, your sort of breakthrough in your own personal life as well. So obviously, the creative breakthroughs, but when did you decide to build a business around this? You know, just your talent, your skill set, and did you go work for somebody else, or was it more like, GG from day one, I'm just going to build this for me?
So I had always loved photography. And a part of my story with my chronic illness is that when I was around 11 years old, I got diagnosed with hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And all of a sudden, my doctor said, you can't play contact sports. You have to sit out in gym class. You have to stop competitive swimming. Find something else to do that, brings you joy, that maybe is competitive in its own right. And so for some reason, I gravitated towards art, and I ended up going to LaGuardia High School in New York City. And if you haven't heard of it, it's known as the Fame School. The movie Fame is based off of the school, and some very famous alumni have come out of LaGuardia. Hopefully I will be considered famous to them one day. But I know that being in that environment really pushed me every single day to focus on learning a new skill, up-leveling, getting better. It's kind of like being an undergrad in high school, because you have your normal course load and then you have additional 3 or 4 extra classes a day that are focused on art. And that was enough to kind of spark like, oh, wow, I'm actually good at this. There's some reason I'm getting A pluses and other people are not. There's some reason people keep coming to me to shoot their headshots or to shoot their music album cover, because LaGuardia is full of all different kinds of artists, or shoot the dancers. So from there, I started my photography business, actually, where I was doing headshots and album covers and live music for a bunch of the students. And this is in high school. I also went out of my way to intern and cold pitch different photography studios around the Upper West Side so that I could do it after school or during the summer. It wasn't far from where I lived. And I ended up working for a company called Fred Marcus Studios, which is a very well-known New York City-based photography studio for weddings, bat mitzvahs, engagement shoots, et cetera. And that was my first internship around 16 years old. And I remember I'm sitting there in the pit and I'm just kind of editing these wedding photos that are actually going out to clients for their wedding albums. And I'm doing the retouching at 16, getting paid whatever I was getting paid at the time, which probably not enough. And I'm sitting next to these people with full-time jobs. Now, flash forward, this is so crazy, but I was at my friend's wedding and I see this photographer and I'm like, hey, I interned for you when I was 16. And I'm like, oh my God, this is one of these full circle moments where my life somehow was connected to that studio. And it kind of just brought a reminder to me that was like, wow, you've come so far from that moment. And in terms of starting a business, so that was the photography side. I continued with that. as I got to college, I decided I wanted to do product photography, movies, billboards, those kinds of action shots or stage studio shoots. And I did a bunch of work there, but then I joined a social media club called Reach at USC. And it was founded in 2017 by some other content creators at the time doing Facebook and YouTube. And the reason they admitted me was because of the potential they saw for me to use my skill set of photography and showcase it online, showcase how I was doing things, showcase the behind the scenes, showcase all of that. So that was the start of it. And then from there, I started working with brands. And by the time COVID happened, I was a senior graduating college and I moved home and I needed to make money. And so I started an LLC and I was like, Mom and Dad, I'm going to live at home for a few years and do this and see what's going to come of it. And here I am living in my own apartment with my two dogs who are also influencers. You can follow them at Zeke and Trixie as well. And they have gotten some brand deals as well. So you really never know what kind of business assets you'll procure in this industry.
But I think there's a way that you got to where you're at, and you said it when you were explaining your time in LaGuardia High School, is that you didn't sit around and wait for somebody to go, hey, your work's great, maybe you should do this. Instead, you were cold calling and reaching out to people and saying, hey, look at what I can do, make me an intern. That's what people forget sometimes, is that, you know, everyone's like, well, I'm so talented. And most people are very talented at one area or another. But if nobody knows you exist, it doesn't matter how talented you are. So I love that you were a go-getter and you went out there and actually put yourself in front of big brands. And that's cool that you did have that sort of full circle moment, because it's funny how life tends to do that. You always end up seeing something that reminds you or going back to the start. And it's just this really serendipitous way to understand where you came from. And I really like that story, but I have to say, it's always funny to me, like you're talking about how your dogs have brand deals. And you'll see these like 8-year-old kids on YouTube making millions of dollars a year. And I'm like, man, clearly there is something here, right? So this space can be very lucrative, but it can also be very expressive. You can really share yourself. You can help people get their word and their message across. Even if you're a dog and you're just cute and you got a great dog mom that can get the best pictures and put you out there. So, you know, again, that shows you the power of branding, personal branding. You can become a leader in a space unintentionally sometimes by just showing up, being consistent and putting that effort in. And it's cool that, you know, you were able to, you know, two of the biggest markets on the planet, you're in New York currently, but you go to school in Southern California and then now back to New York. And that's no small feat to make a name for yourself in those markets. It's a lot easier to be the top photographer in, you know, Winter, South Dakota. And I chose that city because that was my first on-air radio job. But, you know, that's a town of 3,500 people. But to have a name built for you in New York and to work with studios of that caliber, that's a true testament of who you are, but also your entrepreneurial spirit, which I guess would lead me into your next big thing that you're working on, which is called Hosts of Influence. So what's that all about?
Yeah, so obviously throughout my career, and I've been a full-time creator now for 5.5 years, basically since December 2020 was when I started my LLC. So I've been really at it, but I committed to doing it full time when COVID started. And I got sent home from school. Well, sent home. They disclaimed that we would not be on campus for the foreseeable future. So I left, is how I'll put it, along with many other students around the world. And I built my business to a certain point. You know, at that point, I'd been verified in all my social platforms because of the work that I've done and achieved certain benchmarks and gotten invited into rooms that I genuinely was like, wow, this is wild. I put this on my vision board and here I am at the movie premiere, at the White House, at the UN, on these big stages at these conferences. Like, what is life? And people kept coming to me saying, Gigi, how do I do that? Not how do I go viral? Because there are no formulas to going viral besides consistency and a hook and a little bit of luck. Genuinely, anybody that tells you otherwise, I think is a scammer, but that's another story. And for me, I care more about the thing that's going to outlast a viral video, right? There's always conversations happening about a viral sensation, how they'll blow up on their viral moment. They'll get a bunch of money, a bunch of brand deals. We saw this with like the Hawk Tua girl, right? She launches her meme coin And then it crashes. And where is she now? What's going on now? Does she have money? I mean, there's some reports saying some things, other reports saying others. None of my business, but she did not stick to her personal brand. Had she taken that moment and handled it differently, maybe she would have said, you know what, like this viral moment was how it was, but I'm going to build a brand off of it. I'm going to, you know, start going on stages. I'm going to feel what that deeper purpose is. Maybe that would have helped her with the longevity of that viral moment. However, a lot of creators are not thinking that way because they are not thinking about this, I think, as a business. They think, I get brand deals. I'm making money. This is great. That's great. You can make money doing something you love, but if you're not saving money and figure out how to reinvest that money back into your business to help you scale it, you're not going to go anywhere with it. And at some point, you're going to get burnt out and exhausted. So that is where the idea of Posts of Influence was born. It's not your average, you know, person that maybe is a micro influencer that's interested in growing on social media. It's small business owners who have no social media presence, and they essentially need to take the ethos of their brand and communicate that through social content as a founder. And that is what I am training people to do in Hosts of Influence. And you can be a micro content creator and go through this program. I have just found that the people that are the most successful at it are these small business owners looking to become thought leaders to help their business in turn. If you take a micro content creator or a content creator of any size, actually, and you ask them genuinely, what is your purpose? What are you trying to sell? What is your business model? I would say 9 times out of 10, they are not going to actually have anything other than brand deals. And so for me, it's not really a matter of, can I make that person into a thought leader? Absolutely, I could. But the commitment is not there because there's not necessarily any drive behind it to get them to that next level, to serve their community, to sell to a certain group of people that they genuinely are going to be able to help versus, again, just growing followers and getting more brand deals and increasing the revenue, which is valid for sure. And then also teaching them tips and tricks around the PR industry, public speaking industry, how to think bigger and write a children's book or an adult nonfiction book or start public speaking, start a podcast, start group coaching. That's what I'm teaching people how to do.
And this is very near and dear to my heart, because as we talked before this, you know, interview started, I have a company that runs a podcast company, and we have a very similar approach in what we believe is important for businesses. Not everybody wants to be famous for being a famous influencer, or not everybody wants to do a weekly interview. But again, as we were talking earlier, sort of laughing about how I was, you know, on both sides of being older than Google, not everyone has this desire to be on the internet so frequently, but because it's such a big part of today's, you know, ecosystem in the world we live in, you have to have an online digital presence if you're going to run a business. So yeah, it's really important to just, even if you need the guidance to like come up with some content, you can repurpose a little bit of content and really stretch it far without having to constantly record. So I commend you on that, because I think it's really powerful for businesses. But it's also really great to sort of shake the stigma of it, that people think there's no way I could do this. There's absolutely no way. I'm like, if you have a cell phone, you could do it. Like literally you can hold your phone up to your face and do it. It's not hard. People overthink the technical aspect or the equipment aspect. I mean, there's really a lot of easy ways to do it. So definitely check out Hosts of Influence. I know I will definitely be reaching out to you on some information on that, because I think there's a lot of way to collaborate. But how do you make that something that's sustainable for, you know, people to do? Is it, how long is the program? Is it sort of like an ongoing scenario, or is it like buy my course? How can we get a hold of this?
There's no course right now. It's cohort based. So you would get direct access to me, and it's over a period of a couple of months so that there's enough time to grow. I don't think any program I've ever done, aside from the Tony programs, I can start seeing direct actionable results. Because usually I think these programs, at least in what I've done, it's only about an hour of content. And so you have to take the time to digest it in something that's more of like a mastermind or like a nonstop conference, right? You also have so much information. You have to digest it and then you have to figure out how to implement it. So a little bit of all of that would be happening in the program. And I'm launching the cohort model soon. For now, it's been a lot of one-on-one coaching as well. So more to come on that. And maybe a course one day, but I think a course would really have to be very, very good in order for me to even want to sell it to people because of just the personal experience and my expertise in talking to you about it and telling you a story about it, to me, is the only way that you could then get hot seat coaching in the moment to improve or overcome a block that you're having around it. And with what you said before about social media marketing, I mean, I'm sure there was a time where billboard ads went to electronic ads or TV ads, and people were hesitant to do it because of the investment in it, because of the fear it wouldn't work, because of the fear that it wouldn't perform well or sell products. And obviously now TV marketing is so big that even they're incorporating social marketing into TV marketing by doing vertical ads on a wide screen, which TV marketers are probably like, oh my God, this is really ugly, because they've been doing cinematic TV ads for however long they've been doing it. So I think it's just one of these things in the marketing cycle. And I think it's something to pay attention to, especially with AI and now potentially AI ads coming up within our feed and typing in what's the best way to, you know, what's the best organizational software for me to use to manage my business. And maybe then HoneyBook or QuickBook is paying for an ad within your AI search. I think that's the way we're going. So I think just being on top of it and knowing what the next trend is so that you have the knowledge and you're ready to take the risk and like try it out when the time comes is also something that I think people will learn in working with me.
Yeah, it's definitely a passing of the torch moment as far as the technology goes. And it always reminds me, there was this video from the 70s or 80s where it's like, they had the first person was using a credit card out in like the wild, and this giant machine that would like take a carbon copy of your credit card that they would verify with the bank. And everyone's like, oh, this won't take on. No one will ever use these things. Or, you know, then, you know, going from records to cassettes to CDs and MP3s. And it's just this evolution. But because our ability to compute is getting so much faster, it's moving so much faster. It's not a change every 30 years, 50 years. Now it's like weekly, monthly, daily. You know, you're getting these intense changes. And obviously with the birth of AI, there's a whole nother monster. That's a whole nother conversation. But, you know, it's smart to adopt those things. But I want to go back to what you were talking about with Host of Influence. I love the cohort idea because I've actually created a course and I've actually bought many more courses. And it is really easy to just not follow through with it. Like, I've bought courses and then never even opened them. And there's still like in my to-do folder. Then some of them are like 10 years old now. I'm like, I'm never going to go back that far. So I like the accountability, doing something in person or having that one-on-one exchange like we're doing right now where we can talk, we can like spitball ideas. And then in a month or a week, we can check back in. So, okay, let's see your progress. Oh, now I got to prove myself. So make sure you put yourself in those rooms where you're actually doing the work. And, you know, don't just buy something and then think you'll become an expert because you bought the how to use Canva course or the how to use CapCut course, and then you never look at it. You have to actually do the work. So I just want to throw that out there. I like your approach for that because it definitely is the way to go.
And that's strategic because a lot of people do behave like that, and that's consumer behavior. And then people will say, oh, well, I bought her course, but I never did it. Why did you never do it? That's not my fault that you didn't get the result that you wanted because you didn't do the course. And yet they'll still blame you. And that's something I've noticed a lot of people will do, especially when it comes to even going viral or staying consistent. There have been so many times I've wanted to simply quit what I'm doing because my views were down. My engagement was down. I was in a dry season. I was getting so frustrated. And the thing that sets me aside is that I've been at content creation now since 2017 on social media and since 2020 full time. If I wanted to give up, I could have. If I wanted to say the algorithm this, the algorithm that, I don't like this, it's not good, it's, I'm sad, blah, blah, blah. I could have done that, but I didn't. And a lot of people will quit when things get hard. And that is something that, again, in the program, you're also going to get mindset coaching and help with overcoming the blocks and the limiting beliefs you have around social media. The number one thing is, I look ugly on camera, I'm not confident, and I don't know how. Nobody's watching me. I don't care if you're talking. Honestly, sometimes when I'm giving a presentation to one person, I get more nervous than when I'm giving a presentation to 1,000 people because, well, for two reasons. Number one, if it's a person I care about that's going to give me honest feedback, that is harder and far more humbling than giving a keynote or a lecture to a room full of people who usually you don't know and are usually going to say, oh my God, that's so great. And so when you do your first video online or your first exercise, right, in creating content, it's never going to be great. What will make you great is putting in the reps and getting the feedback to tweak things ever so slightly, to try a new form of editing, to meet yourself where you're at and to do things that make you uncomfortable. And I've done that over and over again. And rebranding once you have a brand is also significantly hard, which is kind of what I've been doing for the past year and a half. And again, I could have given up, but I don't. And so people learn that from me too.
Yeah, I talk to people all the time about that, is quitting too early and the consistency factor. And it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if it's content creation, losing weight, starting a business, learning how to use a yo-yo. If you quit after it didn't go up, you're like, I quit. Well, then you're never going to be good. So I agree wholeheartedly. And I like what you said earlier. We kind of glossed over it, but the viral formula that people always sell you, these packages online, is like, follow this formula and you'll go viral over and over and over again. And I've got 97 trillion views in 4 days. And it's like, people get lucky sometimes. Yes, there is some sort of structure that you can use that might help you get some algorithmic pickups, but that's not what's going to get you there. And I think that's sort of something that people focus on that they really shouldn't. Don't worry so much about the metrics of every video you put out there. Is your meaning getting across? Are you getting engagement from the people you want to be engaging with? There's where you're going to find your biggest bang for your buck. And as I mentioned, I work in a podcast network that I run, and we get people that want to come in and be on a bunch of shows. And they'll say, well, I only want to be on shows that are in the top 20 or the top 10. I go, okay, well, let's think about it this way. If I get you on a show that's in the top 5 of all shows ever, just throw that number out there. Very hard to do, by the way. But if we were to get you on something like that, and they have 1 million people watching the episode, and not one person buys your product, gets your course, visits your brand, or does anything, engages with you, is that more valuable to you than a much smaller show, but 30% of their audience likes what you're talking about? They buy your products, they reach out, they follow up, they follow you on social media. What's the more return on investment friendly opportunity? So don't always look at numbers and the shiny object like, I can only be on a top 5 show. Don't think that way. Think of value that you're getting from what your engagement is. And I think that's really important. And I know you kind of talk about that, you know, meaning over metrics, I think, is a very valuable thing. But based on your experience in helping people get to those platforms, what sort of trends are you seeing work on platforms like TikTok, Instagram, LinkedIn? Which ones do you recommend, or are you sort of on all of them? Or is there certain ones that you recommend for certain types of businesses? And what trends do you see and how people can, you know, access that?
Yeah, I think trending content is a great way to dip your toes in the sand, right? Or your feet in the water, whatever the saying is here, right? It's an easy gateway to content creation because it's not hard to go in and see, where do you find the trending audio? How do you tell what's a trend? For example, right now there's a trend that's like, you look happier in air quotes. And then it's, you write whatever you write. So like, thanks, I took a vacation when I really didn't want to, and I feel super rejuvenated. And now my business, like, I've come back to my business with like a clear head, right? And you could put it over any video that you do. that can be applied to anybody. Like some people write, you look happier. Thanks, I was fired and now I'm making more than my full-time job doing content creation, right? You could insert whatever, thanks, I, blah, 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 blah. And so once you know where to find these viral trends, it's easy to apply to your life and your business, your niche. And I think it's an easy way to get in to the industry. Now, if you do that, there's a trap that people fall into, which I have fallen into sometimes. And that is getting lazy. Because if you're always borrowing somebody else's idea in the sense of this is a trend, I'm going to do it because it's a trend. And I've been told by an Instagram expert that doing trends on social media is going to help me grow my business. You do not move past that. You take that as fact. You don't take that as a lesson to implement. What you should then do to set yourself aside and to then start growing is finding other people in your niche or other people that are in completely different niches and saying, I like this original storytelling. How can I take this idea or this editing style or the way that they shot it and make it my own? And then you build your original content and storytelling, right? So I have found that method to work better because then you move into this era of being a thought leader. And in my opinion, if you're a thought leader or an industry expert, whatever words you want to use here, people are going to start coming to you for advice. And they're going to start seeing you as a really knowledgeable person in the industry. Instead of, I have a handful of beauty creators we can go to, they say, this person is an expert in Korean skincare. And I have this one friend who I met her on Instagram. I followed her because she was doing videos about her skincare, specifically Korean skincare. And she ended up creating her own method of doing her Korean skincare. And she called it Jelly Skin. And from there, she built a consumer packaged good product, a skincare and lifestyle brand that she now sells to people based on her method. She does trends, but most importantly, she took that trending moment and she ran with it with her own storytelling. The story of her, how she learned all this from her mom and her grandma and traveling overseas to develop her product and all of this. And now all of a sudden, she's not just a content creator. She's a founder. She's a business leader. And I just think what she's done is such a great example of what anybody who owns a business or seeks to own a business can do with their social media. Because there was a time where she was posting trends. And then you start posting your original content. And then people like it. And then snowballs.
Yeah. No, it's funny. The trend videos that I always find so funny where you see the same video done by different people over and over and over and over again. It's like the guy who sits in his car and throws trash on the street. And then a street cleaner throws in his car and then the guy gets out angry and someone comes and kicks the door closed. And at first, the first time you saw it, I was like, oh, that's, you know, what a jerk that guy is. And it didn't click to me. And then like the next feed comes up and there's another person doing it. And I'm like, oh, okay. So this is just like a script. Somebody's just repeating it. And again, there is some value to that because you can get those views that are so important to sort of building your credibility. But I love that you mentioned your friend that does the jelly skincare now. Because she took her moment and she didn't just leave it in the 15 minutes of spotlight. She then built something from the excitement and the buzz around her name and her brand. So that's another good valuable tip is don't, you know, always find, and we do this in the podcasting world where we'll take one episode and turn it into 15, 20 pieces of content. Always find the ways that you can spread it out into different avenues, into different channels, because that's where you maybe are going to find your break. Maybe it's not from this episode. Maybe we'll turn the transcript of this into a blog post. Somebody will read that. And then that really sparks some interest from a whole different group. And you just never know who's reading, watching, viewing. So always the consistency, but also, you know, don't be content with just having like, we did our 30 minute interview and now that's it. We can turn this into all kinds of good stuff. And as content creators and you, especially, I'm sure that we will. So it's good advice for sure. So one thing I'd like to talk a little bit about, because we briefly glossed over it earlier, You wrote a book. So not only are you this awesome photographer, you're a content creator, you're a public speaker, you're helping people get their brands out there. You wrote a book, and it goes back to your Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which very high level, if you're unfamiliar, it's like a connectivity issue with your joints, your ligaments and things. Your joints can pop out of place very easily and sort of very fragile, for a lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. So that, I'm assuming, was sort of the catalyst to make you want to highlight this just chronic illness thing that you don't always see chronic illness. It can be very underneath the surface where people have no idea, but it's a daunting one. I've actually known someone with it pretty exclusively. So is that what led you into the book? And tell us a little bit about your book, because I think it's cool. It's geared towards children.
Yes. And for those that don't know, the best way that I describe living with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome is like when you have a pair of underwear or sweatpants or a hair tie that runs out of its elasticity and it's just loose. That is how my connective tissue is. Meaning, like you said, it's easier for joints to sublux, fall out of place, easier for your bones to get fractured because everything is so loose. And I struggled deeply with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, chronic pain, brain fog, fatigue throughout my, you know, teenage years, my adolescence, my early adulthood. I ended up also getting surgery and finding out that I have endometriosis as well, which that diagnosis tremendously changed my life for the better. So I felt like I was in a place, and also my content online has always been, there's always been a through line of like, what is life with a chronic illness, right? You don't have to look ill to be sick. And at certain points in my life, whether that was in college or after, I dealt with friends, you know, luckily not family. My family has been the most supportive to me, but other people I know do not have supportive family, or they have family that doesn't believe them or doesn't know how to help them get the care they need through advocacy. But I've dealt with friends, you know, being very disrespectful and unaware and unwilling to understand what chronic illness is. Teachers that I had had in the past, professors at, you know, college that were not really understanding or willing to understand. Luckily, most stuff with work had always been, we understand, and I have a feeling that that's because of HR. But, you know, that kind of, I saw those areas. And then personal life, dating had been very challenging because the guys that I was dating didn't understand. And I just got to a point where I realized this company, A Kid's Book About, they had all of these amazing books. And I'm like, they don't have anything about invisible illness. So I actually reached out to them and I pitched the idea to them back in 2022 and or 2021 even. And we'd been in the talks for a while. We ended up writing the book in late 2022, early 2023. The book was originally published with A Kid's Co., which then got acquired by DK, which is an imprint of Penguin Random House. So now I have become a Penguin author, and the book is relaunched 2 years after it originally launched. And the main topics in the book, again, it details my experience with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome as an example, not again as like, this book is about Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. This book is about resilience and courage and putting yourself out there and standing up for yourself and finding your own individual voice and individuality within your body. That's what the book is about. And it's told through my story. So some of the feedback that I had received on the internet about the book was that it was too specific to Ehlers-Danlos and not general enough. But had I made it general, it wouldn't have been too specific. So I always just keep those things in the back of my mind. And it's actually the catalyst for my next book that I'm writing the proposal for right now.
That's awesome. I love that. And you're exactly right. There's so many people that will just look at you and go, you look fine. What do you mean? What do you mean you can't? And then I think this is a bit of being younger as well. When you're in your 20s and teens and early 20s, you get the people that are impatient. They go, well, I want to go out now. What do you mean you can't go out? Your leg hurts or whatever. That's like unacceptable. You look fine. We're going. Come on. And then people get frustrated and go, well, I don't want to hang out with Gigi anymore because she can never commit. But what they don't understand is that there's something much deeper at play here. And it's not like, you know, and my good friend Crystal, who again I mentioned, she goes through this every day. You know, she's like, you don't think I want to get out of my house? You don't think I want more for what I want to do? You think I want to wake up and feel this way? It's horrible. You know, so I would just encourage people out there, even if you're unaware of somebody's situation, to be a little more kind and patient. And really, if someone tells you what they're dealing with, take some time and look it up. You might be amazed at what you learn and be like, wow, that's really a lot to take on as an individual. So I love that you're sharing this with children, because a lot of people don't give them a voice. I think it's easy to overlook kids and be like, you're fine, little Billy, you're not hurt. And you go, you don't know what I'm feeling inside. And just because I'm young and small doesn't mean that I'm not being honest or aware of what's going on. So I definitely commend you on that. I love it.
And that's kind of why I chose to do a children's book first before an adult nonfiction book, because adults are the ones that are also going to be reading this story to kids. And sometimes I do think it takes reading the simple words to actually understand what somebody is going through. And it's not that deep, but the words are narrowed down enough to where a kid can understand it. A kid can have questions about it, but an adult is actually going to be like, wow, that makes a lot of sense. And that changed my perspective. And sometimes you just need to say things in a simple, straightforward way. And so it says, I think ages 5 to whatever, 5 plus, because, you know, a kid probably wouldn't understand it if they're reading it alone. But the idea of the book is to start that conversation and to make them feel less alone if they are dealing with an invisible illness.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, what's the saying? If you can't explain it to a 5-year-old and make it make sense, then you don't understand it well enough yourself. And there's a lot of truth to that. You have to be able to explain something in a way that is very digestible, because it's really easy to come in and just throw a bunch of jargon and medical terminology, and then it's like deer in the headlights, like, what are you talking about? But I loved, you know, what you did. You explained this very well when you're talking about like a rubber band that runs out of its stretch. That's something we can all visualize. You didn't have to go into like, well, the tendon, the connection. It's like, well, I don't know what any of that means because I'm not a doctor. But the way you explained that was so simple yet so profound, because it created a visual in my mind. So again, that's the beauty of being a good storyteller, that you can accomplish a lot with less words if you pick the right words and simplify things. Everybody's like, I won't sound smart if I don't use every word in the dictionary. Well, you're going to sound pretentious if you use every word in the dictionary. So, you know, numb it down a little bit. And I think you get more of what you're hoping for anyways.
I agree.
Yeah, definitely translates to public speaking as well. You don't have to go up there. And I always go back, have you ever seen the movie The Matrix? There's the one scene with the architect, the old guy at the end, and he's using every word in the thesaurus that nobody has ever heard. And while it's cool sounding, because you're like, what? You have no idea what the guy's talking about. And it's like, don't do that. Don't be that person. Just talk really plainly and treat people like they don't have any clue. But if you teach them, that might open some eyes. So with that, I'm going to put you in the hot seat for a few minutes.
Okay.
And not a bad one. Since we're talking about your book, which is great. We love The Host of Influence. Can't wait to get more information about that. But your true passion right now, your true body of work, still lies in the content creation sphere. So I want to ask you a few questions and just whatever comes to your mind. What's one tool that every creator should learn how to use?
Some kind of AI LLM model. I don't care if it's ChatGPT, Claude, Perplexity, Grok, Copilot. Use whatever you want, but learn how to use it and use it well.
Very good advice. What's your current favorite platform for making connections with people and brands?
Absolutely LinkedIn, hands down, 100,000,000%.
Yeah, Instagram for influencers and, you know, the people doing body lifting or weightlifting and stuff, but LinkedIn for business. I agree with you on that one. What's one boundary that you've learned to set when dealing with brands and people that are trying to acquire your services?
I know my worth, and also that if something is not aligned and I have a feeling in my gut or a client is being extremely difficult, there's probably a reason and a misalignment, and to look deeper into that and start seeking those more aligned clients. And on the note of boundaries that I've made working for myself, is genuinely, this is my home office here, and it's in its own room. At the end of the day, I actually leave my tech in here and I close the door as if I'm leaving my office, and I do not come back until the morning when I'm ready to work. And that has really, really helped me kind of be more present with people I love in my life and not be at work all the time, since I work for myself in my home.
I love that one, because I'm the same way, and it's easy to just be down there all hours of the night typing away. It's like, no, you got to have that boundary and balance of family and work. And that's a great one. That's my favorite answer so far. So what does measuring success look like to you now? What's the next evolution? Obviously, you're Host of Influence in the next book in the limelight coming up. What's the next big platform or stage that you want to be on? What would be the next level of success for you?
The next level of success is going to be a new level of fulfillment in the work that I do. It's less about achieving the next thing or being on the next big stage. Those are cool, shiny things to me, but it's more about the impact and the fulfillment I get from helping other people get to where they need to get and guiding other people on their journey and achieving their own goals as well. So really that kind of leadership that I know I have within me to bring that and scale that with Hosts of Influence to a point where it not only supports my business, but it helps support other people's businesses.
Love that one. And final question before we do a little wrap up. If your younger self could see you right now, what would she say to you?
She'd be like, damn, girl, are you for real? Like, that's us? Really? Cool. Like, see you next time. See you there. Can I intern for you? I think that's what my younger self would probably strive to do.
So definitely feel a sense of pride, which I would imagine wholeheartedly would be the case. What advice would you give to anyone that's trying to build a personal brand with purpose? Obviously, we've kind of touched a bit on that, but if there was like one or two sentence wrap up you could say to somebody, like, if you're trying to build your personal brand, this is what I would tell you.
Yeah. Get clear on the way that you can communicate and convey how you do what you do and what the results are. From there, talking about your stories, writing one-liners down. Oh, I was on a plane and I struck up a conversation with this random woman who, you know, and this is a real story. I struck up a conversation with her because I saw she was taking photos of bougie skincare products that I knew were expensive, because I go to Bloomingdale's and I look around at what people are buying and test the products out. Sometimes as a kid, I did that. And I asked her, like, so what do you do? Do you need like a hand? I have my nails done. Like, it can be something different. She's like, oh my God, yeah. We become friends. She ends up sending me skincare because I turned out to be an influencer. Now she leads like social media at Banana Republic, and we've stayed friends throughout the years. And I just think that it's like starting conversations up, getting curious also about other people that are winning and not saying, oh my God, how are they doing that? Not that they don't deserve it, but like, how are they doing that? And thinking, what do I need to do to get that result? Who do I have to become to get that result? Is a far better question than a judgment of somebody else and where they're at. And so really taking a deeper look at yourself and being like, whose content pisses me off and why does it piss me off? Whose content excites me? Why does it excite me? Who do I want to show up as online? And how can I take elements of all the people I love and maybe even all the people you hate to try to realize what you can do with that? And how you can take your presence to the next level, I think is important as well.
Really good advice, honestly. And the truth is, you're right about one thing. People will look at your success, or if you're going viral, popular, your business is doing well. Even people that were close to you at one point in life, and they're always going to be the guys behind your back that are snickering or talking bad, or, you know, how come he did this? Why is this guy making so much money or whatever? Tune those people out. You're right. Be in circles and rooms with people that make you better and want the best for you and that will help you out. And sometimes that can happen by just having a conversation on an airplane. You just never know who you're going to be. So be friendly. You never know. You might run into the next, Jeff Bezos on an airplane or the next marketing director of Banana Republic. You just never know. Don't burn bridges and keep yourself available. But also, like you said, make sure to have those boundaries in place as well. So if people want to find more about you, they can go to ggrobinson.com. Obviously, as a content curator, you're on all the platforms. I'm assuming it's at GG or GG Robinson. So we'll put links to everything around this video when it's launched. And then where can we find your book? And when will we have a little bit more information on how people can get involved with Host of Influence?
Host of Influence right now, you can go to hostofinfluence.com and put your email in, and I will be revving all that up this fall. And the book is available by, you could go to Penguin Random House and type my name in. You can search a kid's book about chronic illness. Just make sure you're buying it through Penguin Random House, because they have the links to like Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target. Sometimes on Amazon, it does have the old version from A Kid's Co. With the stock. So I wouldn't want you to get the wrong copy because the updated copy is just a little nicer. And I'm very proud of both versions, even though it's the exact same. Just the packaging is a little bit different. So you can just search up A Kid's Book About Chronic Illness or Gigi Robinson, and it should come up.
Awesome. Well, I'll definitely keep those links handy. So when we release this video, we'll make sure everybody knows about it. But Gigi, I have a feeling that I'm going to be bringing you back for more conversations. I really enjoyed getting to know you and learning about not only your mission, but your brands and sort of just your overall mindset. I love that you mentioned mindset earlier. We'll have to dive into that next time, but it's been a pleasure having you on The Measuring Post, and I see nothing but bright, bright future in front of you.
Thank you so much. It was so great to be here, and you're a fantastic interviewer, and I agree. Can't wait to brainstorm more and info share together.
Sounds like a plan to me. Well, Gigi Robinson here on The Measuring Post. We'll see you next time.